Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Big and bad.
We have to go back in time.
Yes, we are going back in time with Miel Pal Cormac Battle. We love this. We love it. Every week, we take a random year and remind ourselves of the big showbiz, the sport, the news stories that emerge during those 12 months. But now I'm joined by the 2FM rock royalty, he likes to call himself, because he wrote that himself.
He does.
Cormac Battle, how's it going?
I'm good, Jen. Yeah, I'm
going?
Really, really good.
Where are we going?
We're going to 2006. Which is, you'd be surprised. You think you know what happened. No, you don't. Nobody knows what happened in 2006. But that's why I'm here to tell you. But there's some surprising things in here. And let us begin.
Okay. Firstly, before we get into the showbiz and the sport and all that, what were you doing in 2006?
What was I doing in 2006? I was working here. I'd been working here by I'd been 3 years here at that stage after my band imploding. And got dropped. I was on... what would you say, skid roll, and I got a job in RTE. Picked me up out of the gutter and gave me a job.
Dusted you off.
Dusted me off and said, here you go, dude.
Here you go,
Here's a place for
Enjoy.
Losers.
This is what I was doing.
Oh.
Like, what was wrong with me?
What? I don't know. Why did you do it?
I was.
Did you want to be famous?
Absolutely not. Sure, I wasn't even in telly or radio then.
But like,
I
know,
had my own. I was working in sales. And I was one of those people who used to shout at The Apprentice when I watched it and saw Alan Sugar. And Lau had moved to London to go to drama school. So I thought, this would be a great way for me to get to London, and work for Alan Sugar. He's going to love me. Like, I'm sound. He's going to love me.
And when you applied for it, when you got the call,
it was full on interviews.
What was it like then?
It was full on interviews. But I knew, I was just fully confident that I could do it, you know, fully confident I could win the show. It was very salesy. This is before, it's a panto now. But this was like the third season or something like that. But I was in for the land of my life when I did that show. And I came back after the show, I came back and set up a business. I only got into telly after that. But Alan Sugar didn't like me, apparently. And actually told Jonathan Ross on his show that he was afraid when he told me I was fired that I was going to jump across the desk and punch him in the face.
And was there any truth in that?
I did feel like doing that. Yeah, well, I was fired in front of 12 million people. So that is going back to our cringy moments.
Yes, that is a cringy moment indeed.
There's a lot of cringe in 2006, I find, just looking at these clips you have set up. Let's kick off. What was the big news story of the day?
Well, the big news story of that time really was Steve Irwin. Do you remember Steve Irwin? He was the crocodile hunter. Everybody in the whole world knew who he was because his TV shows were on various channels 24 hours a day. You could not turn on if you went up the channels. He was there somewhere. His program was mainly the crocodile hunter, but he was an Australian zookeeper. He had his own zoo, conservationist, TV personality. He kind of reminds me, I'm going to say it, he reminds me of the kind of Carl Mullen kind of character. He's just bursting with enthusiasm, and you just have to be around him to get up his positive vibes. The thing happened while, like, he was such a lovely man. Everybody loved him, and he hosted a program with his wife called Terry. But he was doing recording for Crocodile Hunter in 2006. They were meant to be filming some sharks, but something happened with the weather. So they eventually decided, well, actually, the sharks are not here. So we're going to go over. There's loads of stingrays over there. And this is off the coast of Queensland in shallow waters. So he was kind of he used to get very up close and personal with the animals. But he was following the stingray. This stingray was very, very big, about 8 feet in diameter. It's kind of wingspan. Whoa. And Steve was doing the kind of, I don't know, the kind of friendly Steve Irwin sort of vibe with the stingray, but the stingray wasn't having it and turned around and it stabbed Steve in the heart with its tail. And they're poisonous as well, so it injected poison into him. So he didn't have a chance. This thing was huge. And like the chances of being killed by a stingray, I had to look this up. Only 17 deaths have ever been recorded in human history of people being killed by stingrays on planet Earth. And poor Steve Irwin is one of them. He was such a likable man. But here is the man in action with a big, this is a huge dangerous snake. Obviously you can't see it. Big, like it's about 9, 10 feet long. And how he channels his dad, Bob, who inspired him in this clip. Take a listen.
This is where you see the work of my dad, is right here. He taught me to be one-on-one with the snake, to be at one with it, to feel it in my fingers, to allow the snake to feel that there's no danger. Settle down, sweetheart. Settle down now. She's just trying to tag Steve-O on the face. I know you are, sweetheart. You're a beautiful snake. You're absolutely gorgeous.
If you're watching the clip, the snake is trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And only Steve Irwin would be like, you know, sweet, come on, sweetheart, you know, calm down. It's not necessary. But he was just, what a man.
What
do
a
you
way
remember
to
him,
go.
Do you?
I absolutely remember him. Of course I do. He was a living legend.
Yeah.
And you'd watch him with your, you know, your shoulders up around your ears because you're like, how is he doing that? Why is he doing that?
He's just making
that
friends with all these
making
lethal
friends.
Animals. And yeah, so he was gone.
Okay, so that's Steve. Let's talk about Bertie.
Bertie, and like as when I've been doing these over the last few weeks, and I sort of find out information that really kind of surprises me. Before I tell you the story, did you know Bertie Ahern's full name is Bartholomew Patrick Ahern? His first name is Bartholomew. Did you know that?
No, I.
That's
no,
mad,
I didn't.
Isn't it?
It is mad, Bartholomew.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody else on the planet called Bartholomew, unless they're in Bridgerton.
Well, you know, he's called Bertie. Maybe Bartholomew is something you shorten to Bertie.
Yeah, I presume.
So
it
there
is.
Are there must be Bartholomews out there that they call themselves Bert or Bart, or maybe Bart Simpson is Bartholomew Simpson. He is, apparently. Graham's an expert on Simpsons.
But he's not Bartholomew.
He's not Bert. No, he's Bart.
He's Bart. Like, so Bertie should be Bart.
He could
Bertie.
Be Bart, but like, look. 2006.
Go on.
The Celtic Tiger is
his
in
year.
Full swing.
Ah, yeah.
It's happening big time.
Party.
We're all buying houses in Bulgaria and Spain and apartments everywhere.
It is party time.
It is party time. And, you know, Bertie's personal and professional life came under intense scrutiny in 2006. Those revelations of dig outs and the famous whip around payments increased political pressure on him because he was Taoiseach at the time from until 2008. But one thing that caught my attention was an exchange in the Dáil at the time where he was defending the cost of makeup that he used to prepare himself for the Dáil TV cameras, right? So Green Party TD John Gormley claimed that Bertie was spending €480 a week on his personal vanity and accused him of being the Queen of Drumcondra. That's what he called him. But look, here's a clip of the exchange.
I don't think even Lottie Ryan could spend €480 a week on makeup.
Well, look, there's a bit of a justification coming up for this in the end, but I want to play you the clip first. This is a clip of the exchange that happened in the Dáil. It's very funny to hear such things being discussed on the floor of a parliament, but this is it anyway.
Flat out they were.
Isn't it extraordinary, Taoiseach, that you spend more money on makeup than many of the ladies in the cabinet? And is it the case, Taoiseach, that we now could call you the L'Oreal Taoiseach? You spend this money because you're worth it.
Like everyone else who appears on television, as I understand, when you go to RTE, you also very carefully go to the makeup room. You've never been known not to use that on your many television.
How do you know this, Taoiseach? How do you know all of this?
Because I checked this.
And the whole lot. Is it too much trouble for you just to apply the makeup yourself?
And I would love, if we were having this conversation via WhatsApp, I would send you that emoji of the dog, you know, in the room, and the flames just around him. The place is burning to the ground all around them. And they're just in the Dáil talking
they're having
about,
a
makeup.
About makeup. Isn't it brilliant, though?
It's amazing.
It's just amazing. And
flat out.
But like the thing was that Bertie said back to John Gormley, he said, if you become Taoiseach someday, you'll find that the Taoiseach's department, that there is a service provided by two people 2 days a week, and they're paid the SIPTU rates for the job, and I don't think that they should be fired to satisfy you. So, you know, this was, you know, they were employed by the Taoiseach, department of the Taoiseach to do makeup, but, you know, nevertheless, it was a great bit of fun in a turbulent year for Bertie Ahern.
Amazing. Stringfellows.
Stringfellows.
Come on.
I bet you forgot about this.
I did.
Peter Stringfellow, you might know him. He was a guy who opened loads of kind of risque kind of nightclubs across the UK in, Soho. Lap dancing was his speciality.
Yeah.
So lap dancing clubs, scantily clad ladies, all that kind of stuff. So he said they wanted to open one of his famous lap dancing clubs on Parnell Street in Dublin. And this is a mixed residential area in Dublin's north inner city, if you're not familiar with the area. This is like cinemas and it's near the ILAC Centre. From the very beginning, things didn't go to plan. Where locals were campaigning, obviously, and there was it was a bit Father Ted was a bit down with that sort of thing, because it was a two story lap dancing club in a residential area, and there was people with slogans saying,
"Well, you need two floors because you need the first floor for all the dancing, then you need another section for the private dances."
Well, I'll get on to that, but there was a restaurant in there as well if you needed some food.
Ooh.
You know, I wouldn't say it was the best restaurant in the world, but there was people outside with like no sleaze in our area, and protect our women and kids because. When it opened from till 3 a.m., 6 days a week.
Protect our women and children. Why? Because dancers are renowned for stealing children?
I don't know. Don't ask me questions like that, okay. Jane. I don't know. That's what it said. But listen, he was big on recruiting Irish girls for his lap dancing club, and he put out a call, and this is what he said.
My mission is to convince the Irish girls and their mum and dads that it's okay. Come to Stringfellow's and be a dancer. I'd be delighted to open up with a dozen, and then, because the girls now are all European. That's what we're here for. We're all in the European Union. So, yes, there's some exotic countries, Lithuania and Estonia, and the Czech Republic are beautiful girls.
I can't figure out if he's Northern English or Scottish, or like near the... Where is Peter Stringfellow from?
Peter Stringfellow, I have no idea.
He's
judging by his accent, I'd say he's...
very Northern.
He's certainly Northern English.
Very
England,
Northern.
Yeah, but I don't know if any Irish lap dancers answered the call.
Did you? 51552.
I would love to hear from someone who got one of those jobs. But an exotic dance was priced at €30 for 3 minutes. That was the price at the time. And as I said, there was a restaurant and bar thrown into the mix for good measure. However, the celebrities didn't turn up. They stayed away. So did almost everybody else. And the project, it didn't last 5 months and it was gone.
Graham, where's the lap dancing clubs in Dublin now? Compiling a
list.
Are
there lap dancing clubs in Dublin now? Are there?
Is there one on Leeson Street? Is there? I don't know. Graham knows. He knows everything.
He knows. We'll have a comprehensive list of lap dancing clubs and our price list just by the end.
Did you reply to that ad 51552?
You were never in a lap dancing club. No, was I ever in a lap dancing club? I can't answer that question.
I never forget. Leo went on a stag, right, and he went away with the lads, and he went somewhere. I don't know where he went. Cornwall or somewhere. Okay, and he came back, and I picked him up from the airport, and he got into the car, and the first thing he said to me was, "I was in a lap dancing club and I had a private dance. Oh my god, I didn't know whether to tell you. I feel so much better now for telling you." I was like, "Did you bring me back out nice?" I was
really?
Like, "Ah, yeah, didn't care."
And really, you didn't?
Well, he
didn't
was
mind.
In a he was in a gorilla suit, so yeah, he couldn't okay. do it. He couldn't do it. But I was totally fine with that.
Would you not prefer if he didn't tell you at all?
Oh no, honesty is the best policy. You'll find that out in sex and relationship therapy coming at you after 11.
I was in a little nightclub in the red light district in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It was all above board, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a. Okay. I was brought up on stage actually for a part of the show.
Oh my god! Did you pop? Did you do it with a ping pong ball?
No, it was with a banana.
Oh.
There was a lady with a banana on the stage, and she did something with a banana, and she and grabbed me off the front because I was sitting at the front, and I went on stage, and I had to
eat the banana.
I had to eat a bit of the banana. That's it. That's all I'm telling you.
Can I just clarify?
There was no skin-to-skin touch,
okay,
I'll tell you that.
That's fine. But a lap dancing club where there's dancers on tables that take their tops off is very different to a sex show in Amsterdam.
It's very different, I think.
Yeah. Let's move on.
Quickly.
Showbiz.
Showbiz. Do you know the two gentlemen, Pádraig Judas O'Leprosy and Roderick Spartacus O'Leprosy?
O'Leprosy.
And I say O'Leprosy, remember that. Because, Podge and Rog. Podge and Rog, the first time they had got a TV show after having a scare at bedtime little insert that was on for 10 minutes. Podge and Raj got their own show, which debuted on the 6th of February in 2006, and it was an instant smash. Huge, phenomenal figures. In the world of television, they were getting 500,000 viewers like on a Tuesday night or something like that. It was absolutely off the scale. Everyone was tuning in every week to see it. It won Favourite Irish TV Show 2 years in a row. And Podge and Raj actually went on to host the Meteor Awards in the Point Depot at the time. Like, they were phenomenal. The magic was, if you remember seeing the program, was that as puppets, they could pretty much ask anything of any guest, no matter how offensive it was, because they're puppets. So they could, and they it was
and
really
they did.
And they did. They asked people the most outrageous things, which is why so many people tuned in. Here's an example here from the first season. This is Anna Nolan when she was a guest, and like everyone else, she got the Podge and Raj treatment as well.
Let's have a listen.
Everyone remembers you as the Leslie ex nun from the first ever Big Brother.
Were you ever actually, really actually a nun?
I was only there until I was a novice, so it was only 2.5. Yeah, 2.5.
Were you just there for the girls? Were you? Come on. You can tell us now.
No, none of that carry on. I didn't see or experience any of that while I was there. Mm. Honestly.
Did the nuns turn you?
I know, right? I know.
Unbelievable.
2006, different times. Seriously, how much has the world changed now? Could Podge and Raj exist in 2022? They just couldn't. They'd
I
be cancelled out of existence.
And it didn't. Yeah, be cancelled out of his bleeding mind.
It actually came back in 2018 and Dearen was their co-host.
Yeah.
Dearen Garry. Yeah,
different times back then.
Different times.
Different times. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much for that. We're not finished because we need to talk about sport and music.
Big one.
So we'll take a quick break and we will be back with Back in Time with Mr. Cormac Battle.
Big and Bad.
We're going back to 2006 with Mr. Cormac Battle. We've talked about the showbiz stories, the news stories, but what is going on in the sporting world, Cormac?
This is unbelievable. I don't know how I forgot this story. And it's so apt for the times we live in right now, because in the closing minutes of the World Cup between France and Italy in 2006, the world was left stunned when the legendary French player Zinedine Zidane, in the last game of his career, attacked Italian player Marco Materazzi in extra time. He headbutted him to the ground just in extra time. What happened was, apparently Materazzi had said something about his mother, Zidane's mother, and Zidane turned around. He was about 10 feet away from him and he walked back slowly, stood in front of him and went bang, headbutt straight into the chest. Your man, Materazzi, went straight down on the ground and Zidane got a red card and was sent off.
I never
just
forget
before
it.
The end of the World
I
Cup.
I never forget it. I just start going out with Lau. There was a rake of Italians in a room in a hotel watching this because we were watching the football, and I never forget that moment. We have a little clip. Have a listen.
Yeah. Well, there's Zinedine Zidane. He's just headed Materazzi in the middle of the chest. The referee, Horacio Elizondo's come to the side of the field to talk to the fourth official, and it's going to be a red card, and it is a red card for Zidane. And Zinedine Zidane's career ends with being sent off in the World Cup final.
Oh, the boos. That was just awful.
Just
last
incredible.
Match. Okay, music. We played the Breakfast Roll song.
Yeah, that was the big song in Ireland, but really the big song around the world at the time, which became the most played song on Irish and UK radio for the decade of the noughties was Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol.
If I lay here, if I just lay
what a tune.
Yeah.
Amazing. That was the tune of the year. We will play that in full in just a second. Cormac, thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.